It's Champlain Valley Game Night on 101.3 ESPN. Presented by the Windjammer Restaurant and Upper Deck Pub. Local, fresh, and Burlington's original steak and seafood restaurant. Now, here's your host, Brady Farkas.
What's up, everybody? Brady Farkas, Champlain Valley Game Night. It is Wednesday, and we are live on 101.3 ESPN, 101.3ESPN.com, and we're always on the 101.3 ESPN app, which is a free download in the Google Play Store, also in the iTunes Store, and it's got everything you could want. News and notes, scores, stats and information, access to all of our premium web content, our exclusive interviews, and our full show podcast. So you're going to want to go and listen to that and download the app on 101.3 ESPN. Again, a free app for you. Also, we're on the Amazon Echo. A lot of people continuing to tell us, hey, Brady, love the show, love Champlain Valley Game Night, love your station, and I listen on Alexa. So all you have to do is just say enable 101.3 ESPN or open 101.3 ESPN once you have enabled us one time. As for what's coming up today, we go up until 7 o'clock, a full show live at Rocky Ridge. This has been awesome. The start of the Huddle Golf Tour. We've had putting challenges. You can still come out and try to beat the Huddle crew in a putting challenge. Try to get closest to the hole. Try to take home some swag from Bomb Tech Golf, our friends here. Look, they were founded in 2012 when Tyler Sullivan was sick of breaking his driver. He partnered with UVM Engineering to design a new driver, and it was the original Grenade driver. And I've seen this thing in action. They've got the Grenade 2 out here, the improvement. It's absolutely beastly. It's amazing. Multiple features in business and sports magazines. Bomb Tech Golf has evolved into a full-line golf club business. They've got new wedges. They've got a new golf bag, and it's right here for you to see and a chance to take home a lot of stuff in that golf bag. So Bomb Tech Golf is here. We've got prizes from Rocky Ridge as well, and we will be doing the Huddle Golf Tour multiple times throughout this summer. So it has been fun. As for what's coming up today, some talk on a Celtics potential draft pick, some talk on the problems with parents, some talk on Dustin Pedroia, a little bit on the Yankees. But first, Xander Bogaerts has had a good season. Xander Bogaerts, but maybe more importantly than just his numbers or his fielding percentage, Xander Bogaerts has become the leader the Red Sox had been lacking. Last year, when David Ortiz retired, we started asking the question, okay, who picks up the slack leadership-wise? And a lot of us pointed to Dustin Pedroia and said it's got to be him. And it was a logical choice. It was a logical decision. He's been here. He's the longest tenured Red Sox after Big Poppy. He's won an MVP. He's got the resume. He has won World Series. He feels like he should have slid into that leadership role, but it didn't happen. And now, with Pedroia out for much of this season, all but three games, we ask the question again, well, if Pedroia is not there at the beginning, who's the leader? And Xander Bogaerts has emerged. And people, there's a story in The Athletic in which people are really, really singing Bogaerts' praises. And it's not that he's the biggest cheerleader on the bench. It's not that he's the most vocal guy in the dugout. It's he does the little things. When he goes in there after the pitcher has walked a guy on four pitches, and he goes in there and is a calming influence. When Alex Cora goes out to the mound to talk about defensive alignment, and Xander Bogaerts is right there to make sure that everybody else in the infield has gotten the message and understands what's going on and that they're on the same page. Christian Vasquez, Mitch Moreland, they've all spoken about what Bogaerts has done. And this goes back to something that we had a caller yesterday, Jake from Williston, said, because we were talking about analytics, and we were talking a lot yesterday about how pitchers are throwing harder than ever before, but less fastballs than ever before. And what Jake from Wilson, his exact words are, even though analytics have become prevalent, there's still a human element to the game. And that's absolutely right. And that's what the story about Bogaerts reminded me of, in that analytics I am in favor of in a lot of ways. Analytics to me have made the game cleaner. They have made the game, they have put more players in a position to better succeed and better maximize their potential. But the human element still can't be overstated. when you are building a baseball team, when you are building an athletic franchise, when you are building a business, analytics can help put people in a proper position to be successful. What analytics can't do is account for leadership qualities. What analytics can't do is account for team chemistry. And I have always felt that no matter what analytics can do, we have started to forget those things. We have started to forget how important those other factors are. Things like clubhouse chemistry, things like the ability to have that leader who can go out to the mound and have a pulse of the infield and have a sense of the infield and be that calming presence. I have always thought that team chemistry was something that was wildly underrated and undervalued. And analytics people have been telling me for years that, oh, it's not that big a deal. Here's just the formula, and that's how you win. Well, that's not the case. And the Red Sox are proving that. Look, the Red Sox are very statistically driven. They are very analytically driven, and they're good at it. You look at them, you see them out there in the infield and the outfield. Every batter, the defensive players are pulling a card out of their back pocket to say, okay, I'm going to move three to the right or three to the left. The Red Sox are very analytically inclined. But you can't forget about things like communication, like leadership, and like team chemistry. And the Red Sox, part of the reason why they've been so good is because of the fun that they have on the field, because of the ability they have to connect with each other, and that starts from Alex Cora and works its way down, and the relationships that are forged, that has been tantamount to the Red Sox success. If you want to get in, you can. 802-655-6672. I will always be a believer in analytics, but I will also always be a leader or be a believer in leadership and team chemistry mattering. You're never going to change my mind on that, no matter how much statistical data you throw out there. If guys don't get along, if guys don't believe in each other, and if guys aren't willing to support each other, then it's never going to work. It's never going to work. And I found it fascinating, and I appreciated that story in The Athletic about Xander Bogaerts. It's Champlain Valley Game Night on 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. You know, another thing we talked about yesterday was the way that sports have changed. And one of the things that we said, and one of the examples that we have used and utilized, is in the NBA, the trend that big men are now guards in big bodies. Growing up and being tall, look, I was 6 foot in sixth grade. You get a rebound, you weren't allowed to dribble. Get it to a guard. Get it out of your hands. You weren't allowed to shoot from three-point range. That was frowned upon. I was benched in high school for taking jump shots because, hey, you're tall. Be close to the basket. My oh my, how the times have turned here in the last 10 years, even since then. Now, if you are a big man that can't dribble, that can't pass, that can't shoot from deep, you are rendered useless. And I find it fascinating that we talk about the Celtics and their interest in Mo Bamba. Mo Bamba is the center out of Texas. He's 7 foot. He's got a wingspan of like 7 foot seven. He is seen as an elite rim protector, an elite shot blocker. With those long arms, you'd have to be. But I read a fascinating story that really, really chronicled his draft process and how he works through getting ready for the draft. And a lot of his workouts are perimeter based. And look, I did not watch a whole lot of Big 12 basketball this year. I have followed Mo Bamba now in the draft process, but I can't tell you I sat and watched even half the games that he played this year at the University of Texas. What I do like, at least, is his self-awareness. And anyone who's listened to the show for a while knows that I am a big fan of athletes with self-awareness. I mean, Mo Bamba has said, I know I need to have these guard-like qualities. I know I need to be able to shoot from deep. I know that I need to be able to defend from deep. He said, because if the pick and roll is so prevalent in the NBA, then I'm going to get stuck guarding a shifty guard, and I have to be able to hold my own in that matchup. I mean, look at the way the NBA has played in the last 2 or 3 years. Big players that aren't versatile enough, they get left on the bench in crunch time. Remember Clint Capela? game six, I think, of the Western Conference Finals for Houston. Played very well. He had, 15 points or so. Last 5 minutes, was not on the floor. Why? Could not guard Steph Curry. Couldn't, was a defensive liability in, was a defensive liability in the late stages of the game as far as Houston was concerned. Mo Bamba is trying to stave off the elimination of the big man in the way that Joel Embiid has done the same thing. I mean, you look at Joel Embiid. He has become kind of the hybrid big man. He will back you down, which is a rarity, but he'll also take you out and try to shoot threes and shoot over you. Defensively, he's not overly quick, though. He's not a guy I look at and say, okay, I trust him to guard Steph Curry. Mo Bamba is trying to go even further than that. He is trying to become an extension, but better, of Joel Embiid. Look, I don't know how good he's going to be. I don't know if the Celtics are or should going to trade up for the Texas product. But I know that he at least has a handle on how the game is played today and how vastly different it is. Do you like the development of, do you like these developments in the big man? Do you like seeing Dirk Nowitzki, Kristaps Porzingis, Anthony Davis, these guys that are willing and able and need to take themselves out 20, 22 feet away from the basket? And it's not just on offense. Remember, on defense, this is a necessity. It is a requirement now. If you can't guard a guard, you can't play. And so the piece was fascinating in how Mo Bamba has recognized that and how he is doing everything in his power to make sure that he does not become a casualty of the modern NBA. And I thought it was fascinating. Champlain Valley Game Night, 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. You know, as far as the Celtics trying to trade into the top 10, I have very mixed feelings on it. I believe that the Celtics are ready to compete for a championship next year. With a healthy Gordon Hayward and a healthy Kyrie Irving, I, like most people, believe the Celtics are ready to compete for a championship. I do not want to see them blow that up. I also think that they are ready to compete for a championship years down the line. With, you look at this core right now. Kyrie Irving, Al Horford, Gordon Hayward. They help the Celtics win now. Then, when they age out, well, then Jaylen Brown, Jason Tatum take over. And I like that dynamic for the Celtics that's at play. I do not want to see them blow up the future just to try to even better their chance of winning now, because I already think that their chance of winning now is good. As far as moving up into the top 10, I really don't know. I really just don't know. I don't know that if they move up into the top 10, there's a player in there that's going to immediately, one, crack their rotation, and two, help them in the way that Jason Tatum did last year. Jason Tatum is a rarity. Okay, very rarely do you see a player drafted right away that can just carry your franchise in the way that Jason Tatum or Donovan Mitchell did. So I don't want to see them start sacrificing pieces to go and get a player that is a developmental player, is a developmental project, is a guy that sits on the bench for 2 years or so, because you're not cracking a rotation easily over the players that the Celtics have. I'm just not believing that there's that kind of opportunity out there for a rookie to be a difference maker. So I don't want to trade players off my current roster that are going to help to go get a player that I don't know is going to have a lot of opportunity and that I don't know if he's going to really have a chance to make a difference or if he's even a polished enough player to make a difference. And when I look at Mo Bamba, I think here's a guy who gets it, but I don't know that he's polished enough to go out and play me 18, 24 minutes a game. I mean, Marcus Morris can do that for me. Marcus Smart can do that for me. Terry Rozier can do that for me. I'm not willing to sacrifice those guys to try to go and get a player. Look, I'll give you all the draft picks you want in the world to go and get a good draft pick now. I'll trade picks for player. What I don't want to do is trade player for picks, because I like established talent, and the Celtics have a bunch of it, more so than just developmental hope, which is what they would be going for. I like Mo Bamba and appreciate what he's doing. He recognizes how he needs to play, but he's got a lot of on-the-job training to do, and he's not going to get that from me with the Celtics if it means I have to go and give up real players that have already established value in this league. Champlain Valley Game Night. We're live from Rocky Ridge. Remember, the Huddle Golf Tour going on until 7 o'clock. People still coming out here, teeing off for the night. It is a gorgeous night here in St. George. So if you're driving home, you worked a little bit later than everybody else in your office, driving home on your way to Hinesburg, Starksboro, come on, hang out with us. You get your putt in, get a chance to try to win some great swag courtesy of our friends over at Bomb Tech Golf. When we come back, it's been a minute since we've done it. Batting practice, the best sound bites in sports. Who's saying what and what's going on? That's next. Champlain Valley Game Night on 101.3 ESPN.
It's Champlain Valley Game Night with Brady Farkas, only on 101.3 ESPN.
All right, everybody, welcome back. Champlain Valley Game Night right here, 101.3 ESPN, 101.3 ESPN.com. We are live at Rocky Ridge. We're sitting right by the first hole on one side, right by hole number 18 on the other. Absolutely a perfect night. People out here golfing, having a blast. If you want to get in, you can. 802-655-6672. If you want to come out and hang out, you can still come out and try that putting challenge, trying to beat the huddle. We did have somebody hit the 50-footer and win a pair of Red Sox tickets. Very, very cool. All right, let's we used to do this every single day. And then as baseball season started, we just haven't had time. Well, we're bringing it back today. The best sound bites in sports. Who's saying what and what's going on? Batting practice.
Champlain Valley Game Night. Batting practice.
Well, let's start right now. Let's start. Adam Silver was on Golic and Wingo. And, Aaron, let's just run down the list. Let's just start with all of it. Adam Silver, number one. He was on Golic and Wingo this morning.
At the end of the day, I think we will probably end up entering into a set of deals directly with the casinos. But let me just to step back, most importantly from the league standpoint, I mean, this is a position I took as soon as I became commissioner. There's hundreds of billions of dollars bet illegally just in the United States on sports right now. And for us, having it regulated and legal across the country is much better than the current state of affairs.
Yeah, Adam Silver talking about the new decision by the Supreme Court saying that that states can make their own decisions on gambling. And Adam Silver saying, look, legalized gambling is better than what's going on offshore. Because, and look, you start talking about the integrity of games, and I've started to change my tune on this. Because I thought that if gambling was more legalized, then you'd start to get more people who are comfortable coming out of the woodwork trying to persuade players to throw games or point shave or whatever it is. People have told me, we had Dan Worley, sports lawyer, on, that's not the case. Doug Kazarian of ESPN, who used to work out in Vegas, he said the same thing too. That is, in fact, not the case. As you have gambling become more regulated, you start to see, like, Vegas will tell you when the trends are abnormal. Vegas will tell you when there's unusual activity. And when you learn, when you can see that in front of you, it becomes much and much easier to predict and to see if there's odd things going on. So it's actually going to become a safer climate. The NBA also wants to figure out a way to get a piece of the money that's bet illegally off, you know, or bet legally now in this country. Because when it's bet illegally offshore, the NBA gets nothing. The casino or the bookie gets everything. Well, if the league can get a cut of it, if the states can get a cut of it, then that becomes a better incentive for everybody to get on board. It's a money-making opportunity that's not going to compromise the integrity of play. At this point, I'm all for it as long as people themselves can do it responsibly. Adam Silver continued on with Golic and Wingo. Let's give it Adam Silver number two.
From our standpoint, we created this content in the NBA this year. Believe it or not, we'll spend roughly, you know, close to $8 billion this year, you know, in the NBA, a combination of our arenas, paying the players, all our expenses and everything else. It would just seem natural that to the extent that the casinos are going to then take that content and a for-profit business, of course, then use it to make money, that the NBA or whatever sports league, and including the players, are involved in the creation of that content, should get some sort of share.
And that's what we were just talking about. The NBA wants to get its cut. The NBA wants part of the profits here, because the casinos now are going to make money. The states are going to make money. Like, look at horse racing, okay? If you go to Saratoga Racecourse, the state of New York gets money out of that, okay? The horse racing's been doing it for years. They get a piece. The NBA wants its piece. All four major sports now, if they're going to have to deal with legalized gambling, then they're going to want their revenue stream to continue on. One more from Adam Silver. Let's go with number five.
I'm not sure what system we could develop if supposedly the right outcome was he shouldn't be in the finals eight years in a row, and I'm not suggesting it is, but from a system standpoint, I don't know what we can do differently. I don't think anybody was looking at Cleveland going into the finals and saying, what a loaded team. I can't believe he has so many superstars around him, with complete respect to his teammates.
Adam Silver talking about the idea of fatigue between the Warriors and the Cavaliers. People unhappy with seeing LeBron James go to eight straight NBA Finals. People burnt out on the rivalry between Golden State and Cleveland. Look, I mean, what is Adam Silver going to do? There have been a lot of talks about, hey, let's trim down the playoffs. Hey, let's seed it 1 through 16. A lot of different ideas have been floated out there, and it just hasn't been practical. It hasn't been logistical. When you start talking about travel, and you start talking about just the amount of miles. I mean, look, you could, if you were going to let 1 through 16, and then you'd have to have everybody have a balanced schedule, and then Boston would be in Phoenix far more often, and vice versa, and you would create, in order to create an equal schedule, you'd put an unbelievable amount of stress on the players, and the NBA doesn't want that either, because the players have been trying to push for less stress as we've gone on. That's why they've wanted to get rid of the back-to-backs. That's why they wanted to get rid of the three games in four nights. Let's move on here. It's Batting Practice, 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. Chris Mannix, Yahoo Sports, talking about Marcus Smart. Let's stay in the NBA. What exactly did he have to say about Marcus Smart?
Going after him is one thing. Offering, $15 million per year is another. I mean, there's just a gun-shyness this year about, splurging on salary. Teams are looking at the summer of 2019 and seeing what that draft class would look like, and they're reluctant to offer, I don't always call Marcus questionable, but, non-alphas, long-term, big-money deals. So he's going to get offered some money, but I'm not sure that it's going to be an offer that Boston's not going to be willing to match.
So Chris Mannix saying that other teams, yesterday we heard that it was going to be Denver and Indiana and Sacramento, we're going to have real legitimate interest in Marcus Smart, but saying that he thinks that the Celtics will likely be able to retain Smart, and I think that's important because Smart is of extreme value to the Celtics. Look, they have scorers. They have Tatum, Brown, Hayward, Kyrie, Al Horford. They have playmakers on offense. They need that street-tough mentality, defense first, will rebound, will do whatever, will dive on the floor. That's what Marcus Smart brings to the team. The thing that Chris Mannix said that I'm cautious of buying into is the idea that, teams are going to hold off this year because they see what's coming next year. Let's remember how that always works out, because it doesn't always work out the way that you thought. This year we heard about how great the quarterback class was in the NFL. It was going to be Darnold and Rosen. And then Baker Mayfield's there. And then guys start falling down, and Mason Rudolph falls out of the conversation. And Lamar Jackson falls nearly out of the first round. So this great quarterback class that was going to see, six quarterbacks in the top 10 didn't end up being that way. So I caution you when you start saying, I'll hold off this year because I think something better is coming next year. Let's move on here. Aaron, I don't have the number in front of me. Ramona Shelburne was on Freddie and Fitzsimmons talking about the risk involved with trading Kawhi Leonard, or trading for Kawhi Leonard, rather. So let me hear Ramona Shelburne.
The Spurs don't have to trade him where he wants to go. He's still under contract for a year. And from what I understand, his rehabilitation work has been going really well. His training's going really well. It looks like he'll be healthy for the season. He'll be ready to go. And so you get a year's worth of Kawhi Leonard, and that's a year's worth to try to convince him to stay. That's a pretty big risk. And the teams that have assets like that who would be willing to take a risk like that, I don't know. That's blowing up a good young team. If you're talking about Boston, talking about Philly, like those kind of offers, it's hard to make your best offer if you don't really feel confident the guy's going to stay beyond a year. So now you're talking more about teams that are just going to throw Hail Mary, right? We hope we talk and see if Sacramento does something, or Phoenix does something, Memphis does something, and just try to, okay, let's do something for a year and see what happens. But it's clearly not the best way for the Spurs to get a great return for him.
Yeah, see, that's why if I'm the Celtics, I'm really leery of going after Kawhi Leonard. Unless you know he's going to re-sign, then I'm not interested. Because I've already told you I think the Celtics are in a position to contend for the next 10 years. I'm not blowing up that core, that nucleus of the future for the idea of maybe winning once this year and then not having any idea where I stand with both Kawhi Leonard and Kyrie Irving. It's just not worth it to me. You saw what happened last year. Oklahoma City took the shot. Without Kevin Durant, they took the shot. They went after Paul George. They went after Carmelo Anthony. And it backfired on them to the point where they went out in the first round losing to Utah. You saw that. Paul George might not resign. If he doesn't resign, then you gave up Victor Oladipo, who had a really nice year in Indiana. You gave him up for a first-round playoff exit, which, you know what, you could have achieved if Victor Oladipo had stayed there. Aaron, the music's over. Let's run it back again. Let's get batting practice going one more time on Champlain Valley Game Night, live from Rocky Ridge here on 101.3 ESPN. Give me the music, Aaron.
Champlain Valley Game Night, batting practice.
You know, I found this interesting also in the Kawhi Leonard saga. Adrian Wojnarowski talking about on Golic and Wingo, talking about the meeting in San Diego last night between Greg Popovich and Kawhi Leonard. One last chance to try to salvage the relationship. Give me Adrian Wojnarowski number two.
At some point, the Spurs are going to have to, you know, probably really start to engage teams to find a trade and see what's the best possible package that they can get back for him. But their hope is to repair this and try to convince him to stay there. It's not going great.
Well, the meeting last night, I'll be interested when the details come out. I can only imagine somebody like Greg Popovich or Bill Belichick meeting with a disgruntled player. We know that the come-to-Jesus moment for Bill Belichick and Gronk happened after the Monster Energy, you know, kind of joke press conference in which Gronk basically bragged about not being at OTAs. So those kind of conversations happen. Bill Belichick and Gronk were able to get on the same page and keep Gronk in New England. What could Greg Popovich tell Kawhi Leonard to try to sell him on staying in San Antonio? Because I heard earlier today on Golic and Wingo that money isn't the issue. I mean, $80 million more, $219 total million dollars, is what Kawhi Leonard could get long-term in San Antonio. That doesn't matter to him, apparently. The loss of trust is apparently very, very real. And that is where you have seen the desire to leave for Kawhi. All right, let's continue on. Buster Olney, his podcast, he joined us this week. Or he joined us today on The Huddle. You find the interview online at 1013ESPN.com in a little bit. But he's hosted his podcast this week, the Buster Olney Baseball Tonight podcast. And he talked with former Red Sox great Pedro Martinez. But people also forget Pedro Martinez was at one point a very, very good Montreal Expos pitcher. And Buster asked Pedro, what do you think about baseball in Montreal maybe coming back? So, number one, Aaron.
You know what? It would be a great news for the people in Montreal. It would be a great news for me. I'll support it 100%. Now that things are different than they were before, because now you have revenue sharing. And I don't think the team will struggle as bad as we did back in those days. I think everything will point towards Montreal having a team and being able to keep it.
And it's very cool to hear Pedro talk about his time in Montreal, because Pedro gets so looped in with everything in Boston and breaking the curse of the Bambino when the Who's Your Daddy and throwing down Don Zimmer and his great ERA back in 99. Pedro was a very, very integral part of the late 90s, early 2000s Red Sox that finally win. He's a huge part of that storyline, along with guys like Damon and Youkilis and Big Poppy. I mean, he is right there with everybody. But then you think about it, it's nice to hear him talk about his time in Montreal, because he was a Cy Young pitcher in Montreal. And you forget about that because of how great his time in Boston was and because of what he did in Boston and what he accomplished. But it was interesting to hear him talk with reverence about his time in Montreal. And he's probably right that with things like revenue sharing, it's helped make the ability for competitive balance, and they're changing the way things are about arbitration and all that. It's going to continue to get easier for teams to be competitive. And he's probably right that a team in Montreal would be set up better now than it was before. One last thing from Pedro. He also talked about the 94 Expos, the 94 Expos that had been on a roll and were headed towards the playoffs and maybe had a chance to win the World Series before the season was cut short by the strike. Pedro reflecting on the championship team that was never able to form.
And I was so disappointed because I always imagined myself as champion with that team. We had already, roll over Atlanta. We had taken over the league. There was no team that could probably say that they could beat us in any aspect. And we were young and energetic, and we knew how to play the game. Felipe, we have one of the greatest managers at that point. And, I just remember the time when they called and they said, the World Series is over. And we were all expecting, at least if we weren't going to play the entire season, that the World Series was going to be played.
Yeah, unbelievable. And I was too young at that time to recognize the ramifications of the strike. But when I think back to those Expos teams in the mid-90s, I think about how much fun they were and how good they could have been. And look, I'm not sure if I've got it right in terms of who everyone was playing with, but I just think about the great players that came through Montreal. Larry Walker, Andre Scalaraga, Pedro Martinez, Jose Vidro, Rondell White, Moise Salou. I mean, Will Cordero. We're talking about really, really good players with the Montreal Expos. And just, it's a shame that in that season there was an opportunity to try to get to the World Series and a chance to try to win the first championship in franchise history, and you never got to see it. All right, Aaron, kill the music. That'll do it for us on batting practice. Reminder, the Champlain Valley Auction is going on right now. You can save up to 75% on great experiences, great services, great dining options, great nights out with the family. You can save on all of that at ChamplainValleyAuction.com. They've got a special right now, $25 voucher at Shelburne Tap House, which right on Shelburne Road, right in the Little Shelburne Plaza next to Shelburne Iworks, which was a longtime sponsor of our station as well. $10, the bidding starts. Night out with the wife, $25 that you can get for 10? Sounds like a win-win to me, and there's all kinds of other stuff there as well. Our buddies over at the Burger Bar, where we are every Tuesday for trivia, they're involved on the Champlain Valley Auction. Arnie's dog trainer is on Champlain Valley Auction. Everybody is doing it. And look, I bought so many countless things there. Nights at the Stoveflake, luxury stays at the Holiday Inn in Burlington, Doubletree by Hilton. You got somebody coming up you want to put up in a nice hotel and you don't want to break the bank. That's how you can do it. Great gifts for you. Great gifts for the family and friends if experiences are coming up. ChamplainValleyAuction.com is the spot. It ends Friday at noon. When we come back, the Red Sox are singing a very different tune on Dustin Pedroia. And parents ruining youth sports? ? That's next. Champlain Valley Game Night, 101.3 ESPN.
It's Champlain Valley Game Night with Brady Farkas, only on 101.3 ESPN.
Brady Farkas, Champlain Valley Game Night, 101.3 ESPN, 101.3ESPN.com. Live from Rocky Ridge. Our putting challenge winding down. People still trying to get in, though, for those last shots. So if you haven't been here before, this is a spot that you're going to want to be in. Guys, people are playing with the electronic golf cart, right, or golf bag right now, which is something I've never seen, but I got a chance to use it at the commercial break. I'm absolutely stunned by this thing. Pretty crazy. I didn't know that technology existed, but seems pretty fun to me. Red Sox baseball comes up 7:25 with the pregame show. We've got that coverage for you. We'll give you the lineups about 6 minutes from now on the Red Sox. This story comes from RedSox.com. The Red Sox are hoping to get production from Dustin Pedroia this year. That's a very different tune from this surgery is going to make all the difference in the world, and he's going to be able to be a big part of this team. They are hoping to get production from him this year, hoping and confident that he'll have a role. When is the timeline going to come out? Look, Dustin Pedroia, I railed against him last year. He's an integral part of this team this season. This season, they need him. They can't hit left-handed pitching 235 going into last night. He's hitting 304 in his entire in the last 3 years against left-handers. He's a great hitter against left-handed hitters. Him in the lineup pushes Eduardo Nunez's super utility role, which is what they need. He's had a down year, hitting 172 against lefties going into yesterday. Him being there allows Brock Holt to play more utility position rather than just be stuck in the outfield. It allows Rafael Devers to get a day because Nunez or Holt can play in third. Dustin Pedroia is an integral part of this team. They need him. And for the language now coming out to be they hope to get production from him this year, that is not exactly what we want to be hearing. That's not what Red Sox fans want to be hearing. That's not what followers of the team want to be hearing. And the Red Sox are going to need something from Dustin Pedroia this year. And really, they're going to need him to play a majority of the games in the second half of the season. And right now, it doesn't feel like that's likely. I am starting to get less and less confident that Dustin Pedroia plays 75 games this year. In fact, I'm not feeling like that's, I mean, look, they've already played, 49 and 25? They've already played 74 games. There's less than 100 left. Do I think Dustin Pedroia is going to play 75 games? Right now, it doesn't feel that way. And the Red Sox need him because they can't hit left-handed pitching, and they need their lineup to be, the lineup needs more length to it offensively. Defensively, they need to be able to exploit their versatility. Versatility is what the Red Sox have going for them defensively, and they can't use it if Dustin Pedroia is not playing and is not playing with regularity. And not to mention the fact, 4 years, $64 million remaining on that contract, and if he can't play this year, then the contract looks even more like a bust. And that's not something the Red Sox can deal with. Champlain Valley Game Night, 101.3 ESPN, 101.3ESPN.com. So I was on CNN Headline News today, and I don't say that in a bragging way like Arnie usually does, but there was a viral video clip. Maybe a bunch of you have seen it on Facebook or on Twitter. It's a viral video clip of a youth softball tournament, 12-year-olds and under, in Tennessee. And it's two teams from North Carolina that were traveling, and the parents just end up beating the heck out of each other in the middle of the game in the stands. And the reason why, I think, is because there had been a call, you know, call on the field, and one group of fans was arguing with the umpire, and the other group of fans was telling the arguing group of fans to be quiet, and then it just escalated. And so we started talking on CNN today, and it's a conversation that comes up very frequently in life now, is, are parents ruining youth sports? In a lot of cases, the answer is yes, and I understand it. I'm not here to justify it. There's no justification for that. I mean, number one, there could have been criminal charges filed. That in alone makes it wrong. You also get the fact that it's a poor example in sportsmanship. It's a poor example for children. I was talking to somebody who was like, if they're doing that in front of their kids, what are they doing behind closed doors? That's what somebody brings up also. It's a poor example in crisis management, conflict management, resolution of conflict, all of those things are negative. But parents are increasingly invested in their kids' sports. And that is where the waters get muddied. It's not that parents are bad people. It's not that parents are all aggressive. It's that parents are now so wrapped up in their kids' sporting events that it's become a major problem. I mean, think about it from this perspective. Okay, think about it from this perspective. In a lot of cases now, parents look at athletics as a means for their children to go to college. So it has an increased importance to the parents. In a lot of cases, parents think their kids have an opportunity to get a college scholarship. So now not only is it their vehicle to college, it's their vehicle towards getting free college. And that's how parents think. So when you have that much invested in sports, when you think sports can provide all of that for you and for your kid and for your family, you are often going to put it on a pedestal that maybe your kids don't. And then the last piece of this is financial. Look, I'm not stupid. AAU basketball costs a lot of money. Travel baseball costs a lot of money. Travel hockey costs a lot of money, and so does the equipment to play all of these sports. You talk about the fee to play for a team alone. Then you get the travel, the hotel fares, the shoes, the skates, the cleats, the glove. Hockey equipment is absurdly expensive. When you get all of that, youth sports is an investment. This is not when your parents grew up and it was, hey, it's Saturday afternoon at your local town field and it costs very little money. Let's roll out the balls and play. This is many hundreds of dollars a year that families are pouring into their kids' athletic endeavors. And then you throw in, oh, how about the private lessons that everybody wants to have? It's a huge investment. Youth sports is a business and an investment for these families. So when you have that much invested in your kid's, quote, career, I can understand that you want your return on investment. That's where the waters get very, very muddied. Parents do hurt youth sports. But with what youth sports has become in terms of how big it's gotten, I can see why parents are in that position. When you spend thousands of dollars a year on your kid to play something, I can see how you're watching a game a little tense. It doesn't make it right. And I do believe parents are ruining the experience for kids and setting poor examples. But there's so much invested that it's hard not to have seen this kind of thing coming. And that's what I'm saying. Champlain Valley Game Night, 101.3 ESPN and 101.3ESPN.com. Red Sox baseball coming up at 7:25. Red Sox and Twins lineups coming right now. Sox are 49 up, 25 down. The Twins 32 up, 37 down after last night's win. Pitching matchup for tonight, David Price. He's 8-4 with a 3.76 ERA. He has been great in the last few weeks. 6-0 with a 2.64 in his last seven starts. Pitched great against the Mariners last time out, allowing just a run in seven innings. He's pitched good at Target Field in his career, too. Lance Lynn's on the mound for Minnesota. Big free agent acquisition in the offseason. Hasn't lived up to the billing. 4-5 with a 4.98 ERA. But, 3-2-0 over his last eight tells you how bad his April was. Lineups behind the pitchers. Mookie Betts is in right. Andrew Benintendi in left. Xander Bogaerts is at short. J.D. Martinez, the DH. Mitch Moreland at first. Rafael Devers at third. Brock Holt's at second tonight. Christian Vasquez, the catcher. Jackie Bradley Jr. is in center. Lineup for the Twins. Robbie Grossman is the DH. Eddie Rosario's in left. Eduardo Nunez at third. Brian Dozier at second. Logan Morrison at first, hitting just 191. Ahir Adrianza is at short. Max Kepler is at right. Mitch Garver, the catcher, and Ryan Lamar in center. We've had a great time at Rocky Ridge. It's been a blast. We had intern Kevin out here. Intern Lewis was out here. We had intern Nathan back in the studio. Aaron running the board. Sales guy Jeff. Sales guy Steve. Everybody out here for Rich and Arnie in the huddle. We're back in studio tomorrow at Champlain Valley Game Night right here on 101.3 ESPN.